The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session, pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case this morning is 2018-1262, LRC Realty Incorporated versus BEB Properties, Newpar DBA, Verizon Wireless et al. Versus Bruce Bird et al. For the appellant, I think we have first Mr. Fitzgerald.
May it please the court. My name is Timothy Fitzgerald. I am here on behalf of the appellant LRC Realty. If I could, on behalf of the appellants, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of our time for rebuttal. Also, for the court's information, I am going to be splitting my time with Mr. Dove, who represents 112 Parker Court. For 135 years, the law in Ohio has been, dating back to this court's opinion in 1884 in Smith versus Harrison, that absent a reservation of the rights under a lease, the right to receive rents and profits from real estate runs with the title to the property and is the right of the owner of the reversion of the property to receive those rents as they accrue into the future. It is this legal principle which is the background to the court's consideration today of the case that we are here on. And the issue is whether a prior owner who has not reserved the right to rent in any deed or other document that is within the chain of title to this property is entitled to receive rent into the future and has the ability to assign that the right to those rents to a third party where the conveyance of the property took place before an assignment was attempted. There are three reasons why the court should reverse the 11th District Court of Appeals in this case and reinstate the trial court's summary judgment. First, in the courts below, no one, not the Byrds, nor any other party, and indeed even the Court of Appeals acknowledged that in the deed of conveyance between BEB Properties and Baker and Sievis in 1994, there was absolutely no reservation of the right to receive the rents. It is for this reason that the Byrds attempted to unsuccessfully seek reformation of a deed between 112 Parker Court and LRC Realty, a deed to which they were not a party to. Second, the assignment which was attempted between BEB Properties and the Byrds took place at a time after the conveyance had already occurred to Baker and Sievis in 1994. Therefore, under this court's precedent, you cannot assign a right to which you have no legal ability to assign. And finally, the Court of Appeals decided this case based upon a legal theory that had never been briefed or argued or developed at any point in any case or at any time in the case at the trial court or even in the Court of Appeals briefing. It decided it based upon language in the deed which makes the property subject to the lease between...
Assume we think you're right about all of that. What should we do?
You should reinstate the trial court's summary judgment and
What about the other equitable arguments that I don't think the Court of Appeals got to?
The other arguments have all been rejected at the trial court and...
Well, but the trial court doesn't matter. What about the other arguments on appeal?
Such as?
Well, I think there were arguments raised about estoppel. There were arguments raised about the... statute of limitations. I mean, the court applied 8-year contract statute of limitation. There's no contract claim here, is there?
That argument it relates to the 112 Parker Court case. The other arguments that relate to LRC Realty can be resolved in this court. And the basis is for the very reasons why the court should reinstate the trial court's summary judgment. And that is that there was no prior notice that LRC Realty would have been aware of as to the reservation of rents. The deed does not contain any reservation of rents. That's been conceded here. And the assignment that took place was done months after the conveyance. And so there's absolutely no basis in which LRC Realty cannot prevail in this case. So whether or not the Court of Appeals address those, this court can deal with those on the basis of the legal arguments that are before the court today. So that is why we believe that LRC Realty is entitled to the reinstatement of summary judgment. The argument that's made in this case that LRC Realty was not a bona fide purchaser can be rejected for the very simple reason that, first, there is no evidence that LRC Realty had actual knowledge of the reservation of rents, none whatsoever. And in terms of whether there is constructive notice, what are the documents and what is the evidence that would give rise to a possible argument that there's constructive notice? And those documents include the lease, which the lease does not in any way reserve the right to rents to BEB properties. And the easement does not in any way address the right to rents being reserved to BEB properties. And the assignment itself, as I mentioned a moment ago, cannot in any way have conveyed to the Byrds the right to receive those rents because that assignment was made months after the conveyance of the entire estate from BEB properties to Baker and Sivas. The other evidence that is relied on here include the suggestion that there was some discussion with the owner of 112 Parker Court, Mr. Randy Bennett, in terms of what he understood was his rights to receive the rent. And there is no evidence that that conversation took place before the conveyance from 112 Parker Court to LRC Realty took place. In fact, the conversation that was discussed at Mr. Bennett's deposition was that he had a conversation with an attorney on behalf of LRC Realty, and that attorney was me. And that was shortly before we filed the lawsuit in 2014. So there's no evidence that there was any communication between Randy Bennett and Bernie Casamento on behalf of LRC Realty before the conveyance. And the purchase agreement argument that relates to language that was struck from the purchase agreement relating to rental rights that 112 Parker Court had was clearly explained as being based upon some winter storage from other tenants that had equipment in the property that had nothing to do with the cell tower lease. So there's no evidence that there was any constructive notice that LRC Realty would have known that there was a reservation of rights by BEB properties that was then subsequently conveyed and assigned to the Byrds. Now, why is it that the subject to language does not apply here? First of all, it was never argued by anyone in the case that that subject to language in any way was a reservation of the rights to the rental amounts. And as explained by Judge Grendel in her dissenting opinion, and as explained by the amicus in this case, the Ohio Association of Independent Title Agents, that subject to language is language that qualifies the warranties that are being given in a warranty deed, which doesn't have anything to do with the reservation of rights to rents, because even the language that's in the deed itself does not mention the right to rents. The other reasons why the subject to language does not relate to the reservation of rights to the rents is that the Byrds' own attorney, prior to the lawsuits being filed here, had done his own examination of the documents that are in the chain of title, and as reflected in his letter, which appears at the supplement, LRC supplement to the brief at pages 231 and 232, he came to the conclusion as well that there was no language anywhere in any recorded document that the right to rents had been reserved by BEB properties. And finally, the Byrds have presented the affidavit of David Eardley, who drafted the deed, and nowhere in Mr. Eardley's affidavit does he mention the fact that he construed the subject to language as meaning a reservation of the right to rents. And therefore, there's nothing that appears in the deed itself that reserved the right to rents. I see that I'm into Mr. Dove's argument time. Unless there's a question for me, I will turn the argument over to Mr. Dove. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Robert Dove, and I am here on behalf of 1112 Parker Court, LLC. This case begins and ends with whether or not you believe in the sale of real property, all the rights in that property are transferred to the buyer, absent an express reservation by the seller.
Counselor, assume we agree with you on that. What should we do? Do you agree that I'll be remanded to decide the equitable claims they raised?
Your Honor, I don't believe that several of the equitable claims raised are properly before the court.
That's really not the question. The question is, should we remand to the Court of Appeals to decide those if we agree with you on the deed issue?
I believe the trial court's decision should be reinstated. If you remand to the appellate court on the equitable issues, there you never reach them. As a matter of law, the rights in the property transferred once the deed.
Well, but even if that's right, I mean, there's. Let me finish. The trial court, for example, applied a contract statute of limitation. Obviously, there's no contract here. That can't be right, right?
Well, Your Honor, the claim that my client made against the appellee was a tortious interference with contract, and that is my understanding of why the trial court applied the contract statute of limitations. They applied it incorrectly. We did not appeal that issue. We were satisfied with the judgment we received.
Well, but if there's no contract.
There is a contract. The lease is the contract. Tortious interference of contract consists of five elements. Is there a contract? Is the appellee aware of the contract? Did the appellee interfere with the contract such to cause breach? And was.
There wasn't a lease between these two parties, so.
There was not a lease between BEB Properties and 1112 Parker Court, LLC, is that?
So it's pretty hard to apply the contract statute of limitations, one would think.
Does the statute of limitations preclude the legal issue that if you accept rents that you are not entitled to, the rightful owner of those rents should still be able to receive them? And that's what the trial court held, that there was a contract. My client was bound by that contract under the terms of the lease. The benefits under the terms of the lease were meant to inure to my client, yet those benefits were being.
So you were essentially seeking restitution, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's an equitable remedy, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so equitable defenses would apply, right?
The only other equitable defense that the appellees have raised is equitable estoppel, which would require a factual misrepresentation by one of the appellants, and that is not present in this case. And then doctrine and merger would preclude. Doctrine and merger act to fully integrate the deed that was accepted without qualification and did not include an express reservation, so it becomes the best evidence of the party's intent. The way the appellees try to get around that is by claiming mistake. Mistake is only a defense to parties that are in privity with the appellants and both lower courts.
So if that's the case, why didn't your client complain about not getting this rent?
As soon as my client became aware he was entitled to the rent, he complained that it was the genesis of his involvement in this lawsuit.
But your client paid the rent to somebody else for quite a while.
No, Your Honor, my client.
I'm sorry. You're asking to recover the paid rent, right?
I am asking to recover the rent that my client was entitled to under the lease during his period of ownership.
And its period of ownership, it sat on its rights.
His failure to exercise his rights does not constitute a waiver of his rights. And as soon as he became aware of his rights, he sought to execute them.
But isn't that what the trial court or the appellate court would have to deal with if we remand?
I do not believe, based on the pure application of the law, that you reach the equitable arguments. As an operation of law, once the deed was accepted without qualification and without an express reservation, that is where the analysis ends. The appellees have no rights under the lease to claim, have no rights to the rental payments because they were sold to another property before they were purportedly assigned to them. So the appellees are simply claiming a right they do not have.
But aren't they claiming you're estopped to make that argument?
Equitable estoppel requires a factual misrepresentation. There is no factual misrepresentation alleged in this case. The elements of equitable estoppel are not present in this case.
Okay.
I see that we have reached 2 minutes. I'd like to reserve the remainder of the time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Jim Rosenthal, and it is my privilege to represent the appellees Bruce and Sheila Bird individually and as successors and assigns of BEB Properties in this case before you today. This was a summary judgment case in which every available fact and every inference that could be drawn from such facts proved the intent of every party before you in every transaction in this property and supported the right of Bruce and Sheila Bird to retain the cell phone tower lease payments that they had received over 19 years and supported their right to continue to receive them in the future. Bruce and Sheila Bird, the appellees, are the only parties whose interest and intent with respect to the rents has remained consistent over 19 years. They are the only parties who entered a transaction wherein they intended to acquire those rents. And they are the only parties who actually paid for the right to receive those rents. The undisputed evidence is that back in 1995, BEB Properties had no intention to transfer the cell phone tower rents to Mr. Sivis and Mr. Baker. And at that time, it is undisputed that Sivis and Baker had no intention to acquire the cell phone tower rents. The affidavits of Mr. Baker for the buyer and Mr. Erdley for the seller on this point stand unrefuted. Now, 112 Parker Court, LLC, is a party that negotiated for and purchased this property with actual knowledge that the cell phone tower rents were not part of its deal. This fact is undisputed. 112 Parker Court owned the property for 10 years, during which time it acknowledged in writing that it had no right to the rents. And it sold the property with no intent to transfer any rents on the property because it understood it never had a right to them. We submit that 112 Parker Court's undisputed actual knowledge of the assignment of rent and its unequivocal waiver of the right to receive rent makes the lack of an express reservation in any deed irrelevant. The law holds that a reservation or restriction on land or matters affecting the land is enforceable against a party with actual knowledge of it. We think that 112 Parker Court had actual knowledge that the rents from the lease affecting this property had been assigned or reserved, if you will, to a prior owner. As we have tried to show throughout this litigation, there is no injustice done by enforcing the rent assignment against this party whose knowledge and acquiescence over a long period was never legitimately disputed. As a result of these facts and the lack of any considerations in 112 Parker Court's favor, proposition of law one regarding rent running with the land is not threatened or even implicated with respect to this appellant.
Well, why didn't you try to reform the 1995 deed?
We had all of the parties to the present deed before the court, and it seemed sufficient at the time. It seemed that we could prove everyone's intent. Those parties were before the court, and that is the reasoning that we undertook, Your Honor. Yeah. I understand it's a good question.
It would have been a lot easier if you tried to reform that deed.
It may have in retrospect, but we were able to prove the intent without any real and any material opposition whatsoever to the Sivis and Baker deed. But bringing more parties into the court, at the time it didn't seem that it was necessary, given that the current parties and their provable intent was before the court.
Okay. Assume for a second we don't agree with you, your argument about the deed. What should we do? Do we reinstate the trial court, or does this need to go back to the Court of Appeals?
Well, we obviously do not want the trial court opinion reinstated. We think it was riddled with error and unfairness. And
you're friends on the other side say that there's not equitable issues that still need to be resolved. What would be the equitable issues if we agreed with them on their deed construction?
Well, Your Honor, you've already
They haven't been considered by the Court of Appeals.
You've already articulated some of them. We think waiver, estoppel, laches all apply.
Were those all raised below in the assignments of error?
Yeah. I mean, they were argued in the Court of Appeals. They were not assignments of error. The assignment of error was just that summary judgment was improperly granted.
Do those apply against both parties or just against New Parker?
We strongly feel that they apply against both parties. The difference between the parties, and I can explain this.
How would LRC, for example, be estopped, or how would explain to me how one of those issues would apply
LRC,
to LRC?
Our position is that LRC had constructive knowledge, unlike 112 Parker Court, which had actual knowledge. It actually entered a deal where it was offered the rent, you know, it was told, we do not have these rents to sell to you, you can't buy them. So it didn't buy them, it didn't think it was buying them. LRC, we argue, has constructive knowledge of the assignment as a result of what is in the deed itself, the Civison Baker deed. We have a more expansive reading, which we think is perfectly consistent with Ohio law, of not just the subject to clause, but the accepting clause that's at the end of the thing, at the end of the deed. And we think that the assignment, the memorandum of assignment, which was a filed document, it was recorded with the county recorder, refers to the lease. The lease is referred to in the deed. I don't think it's any stretch to charge them with constructive knowledge, as we've pointed out, of the existence of the lease. The lease shows that there's rent. They're disclaiming rent in their purchase agreement, and the assignment shows exactly.
I guess I'm kind of specific. I mean, I know that's your argument, but on the equitable issues, estoppel, laches, specifically about those issues, what about?
What would apply to
LRC? I mean, they didn't sit on their rights, doesn't it seem like.
Well, we argue that they sat on them for a year in terms of laches. But in terms of waiver, they signed a purchase agreement. Their intent, provable, demonstrably uncontested intent, was not to acquire rents associated with the property. Our belief is that when you put together the knowledge that's imputed to them under the deed and under the recorded documents with their purchase agreement that they weren't interested in acquiring rents, didn't think they were getting any rents, I think that seems like a waiver to me.
And the purchase agreements reflect that? I mean, just the dollar amount that exchanged hands?
The purchase agreement has an express provision where it says that LRC is not acquiring any tenant leases, deposits, rents, or profits affecting the property.
They would have been paying more had they.
Our belief is that if they knew that there was $500,000 in rent coming to them, that would have been a different business decision than they made. I mean, clearly they were buying the property as a property. They weren't investing in the rents. I think that that is clear. But if it's not clear, to answer Justice DeWine's point about this, I would send us back to the trial court. I mean, we think that there's plenty of triable issues if that's the way that this needs to go. The LRC claims to be a bona fide purchaser without notice. And I was just explaining, we think that the evidence is quite clear that they are imputed with knowledge of the assignment of rents. And if they are not a bona fide purchaser without notice, then they cannot rely exclusively on this idea that if the deed lacks express reservation or particular words of reservation, then the case is over. Because the corollaries of law that we are relying on in terms of notice and constructive notice take them out of that rule. The recorded memorandum of the assignment of rents to the Byrds is a document contemplated by the deed in the accepting clause at the end. It's probably part of the warranty, where it refers to restrictions of record, conditions, reservations, or easements created in conjunction therewith. I would like to say a bit of a word or two about this chain of title concept, because Mr. Fitzgerald raised it, and it was absolutely never brought up or argued. There was no evidence in the trial court of what the chain of title was. There were no experts describing what would or would not be in the chain of title for somebody who was looking at it. LRC and the amicus are injecting facts and really sort of putative expert opinions into this case at the appellate level, which we feel is not proper. If the record needs to be developed on that issue, again, it would be a remand issue. One thing I would like to also point out is that LRC, for all its talk about what the deed didn't say in terms of reserving the rents, clearly did not rely on that deed in any way in transacting business in this property. It claims it didn't even know that the cell phone tower rents or the cell phone tower was part of its property when it was purchased, but that was clearly adequately disclosed in the deed itself. And on the basis of this deed that it didn't rely on in any way, it wants to impose a forfeiture on the Byrds and earn an extraordinary windfall for itself in the case of future rents. Your Honors, the Court of Appeals decision we submit is consistent with every party's provable intent in this case. It's consistent with every party's reasonable contractual expectations based upon the transactions and the deals that they actually made in connection with this property. It is consistent with a status quo of more than 18 years. It preserves the Byrds' investment and gives both appellants the benefit of their bargains. They suffer no harm or injury if the ruling is affirmed. It is also consistent with Ohio law. Gill versus Fletcher in particular is a case that we think takes a broad view of how to interpret a deed. It invites looking at the circumstances of the deed. It is a case where there was actually a factual record developed in addition to looking at the language of the deed. And we think that all of that points, in this case, in favor of affirming what the Court of Appeals did. Reversing the Court of Appeals and adopting the appellant's preferred outcome, by contrast, imposes a forfeiture and a likely hardship on the Byrds and bestows a windfall on the appellants. It would reward a lack of investment and a lack of diligence on the part of 112 Parker Court and LRC Realty. And we request that the Court of Appeals ruling be affirmed, or alternatively, that the case be remanded for a trial to determine what one or either of those appellants knew with respect to their transactions in the property, based upon the law that says that if they had actual or constructive knowledge, then they are bound by the restrictions affecting the land. If there are no further questions, I thank you so much.
Thank you. Counsel, you've saved a little over a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the equitable issues, the only equitable defense that was raised by the Byrds in the trial court was the estoppel affirmative defense. They didn't raise latches or any other affirmative defense that would relate to either 112 Parker Court or LRC Realty. The argument that that LRC Realty had constructive notice of the assignment of the partnership interests from BEB Properties. Let's take a look at exactly the chronology of how that happened. On March 22, 1995, the deed of conveyance is made to Baker and Divas without any reservation of the rents. Under the revised code section 5302.04, the entire estate, everything that relates to that property, is conveyed to Baker and Sivas, unless it's expressly stated in the deed that there was a reservation. There was no reservation. So as of March 22, 1995, Baker and Sivas owned everything that related to that property, including the right to receive the rents. It wasn't until May 1995, a month and a half later, that the assignment was made, and the document itself, the memorandum of assignment, and the assignment itself were not dated until June 22, 1995. They could not have assigned the right to rents in the assignment because they had already conveyed that entire right to Baker and Sivas. That's the harm here, is that the revised code statutes are being put in jeopardy if the Court of Appeals opinion is allowed to stand. And with that, we would ask that the court reverse the Court of Appeals opinion and reinstate the trial court's summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.